I'm thrilled to be talking with violinist Daniel Roberts, who is the second violin player of the Castalion String Quartet, a London-based young quartet that in recent years taken a lot of international prizes and made the rounds throughout Europe and was just about to have a major American tour last spring. Things didn't work out, as we all know. Pandemic came along, but Fontana Chamber Arts is pleased to present them in a virtual sense this Friday at 7:30. Daniel, thanks for chatting with me about this concert. I'm really glad to connect, even though it's from thousands of miles away.
Yeah, oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I wish dearly we could all be there chatting with you instead of sitting here in my home in London, but yeah, so is the way of the world.
It was poignant to scroll down the Castalion String Quartet feed on Facebook and see your picture. You were set to play Carnegie Hall.
Would that have been the
first time?
That was going to be our Carnegie Hall debut, which, you know, obviously has a bit of a ring to it, and something that's booked, you know, years in advance, and you build up to it. And it was really cancelled the night before. So we were in New York, and the rest of the group were arriving at the house I was staying in Brooklyn to you know, do our day before rehearsal. And our agent called and said, It's off. So that was I think we were the first of their concerts to be cancelled because of COVID. So, yeah, bad timing. It was Friday the 13th as well.
March 13th. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you must have had a hard time processing that period. I mean, you're ready to play. Did you all scatter to the winds, or do you all live nearby?
Yeah, well, we're all based in London, mm-hmm. Although our first violinist, Sini, is from Finland, so her family's there, and our violist, Charlotte, is from the French Alps, so her family's there, and my parents are up in Yorkshire, and yeah, it was really, you know, it was looking back. Of course, it's such an extended stretch, but at that point, we had no idea. So we just made it back to the UK and, you know, knew we weren't going to be playing together for a month or so, at least. Of course, it turned out to be a lot longer than that. But yeah, we then kind of went to the places where we felt safest and most comfortable and were apart for, you know, a good many months from that moment, which was very strange because...
Yeah.
Of course, with something like Carnegie on the horizon, it felt like we were in peak condition, you know, and really in the zone, and had of course been working incredibly hard and intensely up until that point. So for that suddenly to all be gone, as you say, was really, really difficult to process. Yeah.
Did you keep playing? Or were you tempted to just stop for a bit?
You know, I know that we all immediately took breaks from our instruments.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very, you know, that's... and
weird.
You know, the type of breaks that we haven't taken since we were very young. So that was really strange. But, you know, it really felt, it was really hard. You know, you went through various stages of the process of how I think we all individually felt after Carnegie being cancelled and then realizing there was this uncertain future. And I think it was a kind of, you know, the silver lining was it was a good opportunity to take a breather and to not just be in that zone of constant performing. You know, it felt like a kind of perpetual promotion journey of you know, as you say, competitions in our early days, and then you build up and you get agents and then you have the opportunities and then you're trying to take them, And it's just kind of, you know, it feels relentless almost. And when you're in it, you're just doing it. So it was good actually to have a period of time where we could reflect and be away from our instruments. And that meant, you know, in the moments where we have been able to come back together since COVID, they've been really exciting. And hopefully for the future, it adds a kind of another layer of freshness to our playing, I guess, is the hope. But we'll see. Yeah.
How long have you been able to rehearse in person?
Not very long at all. I mean, it's been also a constant battle, really, between that we are or have been legally allowed to rehearse at certain points during COVID and even during lockdowns. But then there's the choice of, you know, there's these terrible new variants which really hit the UK very hard in January. And, you know, we are all living with other people, some of whom have to work in schools. Some of, you know, I live with an 80-year-old man, and our Chalice lives with his auntie, who's almost 80. So then you have to, it's not just about,
yeah,
would we like to rehearse and play music together? Of course we would. That's, we're just absolutely itching to do that. But there are other considerations, which, you know, really life or death, really considerations, and that they've been really, really hard decisions to make. But in September we had two performances at the Wigmore Hall that were streamed. So we were able to rehearse for those, and of course we. We rehearsed and performed for the concert that's going out in Kalamazoo.
Right. It's
debuting
on Friday at 7:30. And if listeners are interested in purchasing a viewing pass, the website is fontanamusic.org. I'm speaking to Daniel Roberts of the Castalian String Quartet, going over some of the difficulties. I'm sure each of you had different reactions to the shutdowns, the pandemic, and I know that, you know, the work you do normally together would be lots of playing, lots of discussing interpretation. Were you also were you there for each other as like talking about what you're going through in that sense, or is it more of a kind of keeping it focused on the work?
That's a very good question. I mean, I think it was important for us to be there for each other, as, you know, we were the only ones who could probably understand what the others were going through, even though we all reacted somewhat differently. So it's always in string quartet life, it's balancing that friendship with the professionalism and the work. So, you know, for example, we'd have a Zoom birthday party for one of the members one week, and then the next week we'd have to have a meeting where, you know, you're discussing concerts that you know are likely not to happen. So, you know, it's really been supporting each other and supporting each other. I think we have more than ever prioritized the friendship side of things and looking after each other when we're in different situations and being separated from, you know, I know that at the beginning I was separated from my girlfriend for many months, and that's of course incredibly difficult. And then, you know, we have to make choices about whether we're going to prioritize the possibility of being together at a moment that might not actually need to happen because a concert's cancelled or something, or do we prioritize each other's sanity and happiness. And I think in a situation like this, we prioritize the friendship so
My,
far. Yeah.
there will be stories to tell in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I would really love now just to hear about the music you prioritized for this concert recording. It is a recording. Where did you film it, and under what circumstances?
Yeah, it was very unusual because we recorded in a hall called Saffron Hall, which is about an hour from London, in Essex. And it's really stunning. It's a stunning hall, really in a little village, but attached to a school. But they have a really wonderful series there, and it's run by inspiring people. And we thought it was, you know, really the ideal place. But playing in such a large hall without any audience, and there weren't even any seats out, that was really, you know, to kind of find the concert atmosphere. And even to know that you were playing for something that was not going to be broadcast for many months, it was a challenge, but one we enjoyed. We enjoyed very much. And the program, really all pieces close to our hearts. The Haydn Emperor Quartet. One of our breakthrough projects in the UK was performing all six of Haydn's Opus 76 quartets at the Wigmore Hall, and we recorded them for the Wigmore Live label.
Available now.
That was really it. Yeah, actually, not quite available yet. But it will be. Yeah, no, you'll have to have me back on when
okay.
it is. But that, you know, that was a thrilling project, and you know, it was wonderful to be able to pick the Emperor for this recording, and then Janáček's Kreutzer Sonata, which we've been playing a lot, and we'll continue to perform its program next season as well, which is it's what, under 20 minutes in length, but exhausting and intense, its subject matter is just so dramatic. It really does require both physically and mentally, it drains a lot of reserves.
It's called, and, it has a nickname, the Kreutzer, just like the Haydn has the Emperor nickname, I think, for the slow movement.
For the slow movement, that's right, yeah.
The Kreutzer nickname, perhaps you could embellish on that a little.
Yeah, okay, so there was, of course, the original Beethoven violin and piano sonata, which was nicknamed the Kreutzer after the great violinist. And then there's the Tolstoy novella called the Kreutzer Sonata, which features references Beethoven's violin sonata. And Janáček, I suppose, combined the two in that there are programmatic elements to his string quartet, and also some very deftly concealed and disguised quotes from Beethoven's violin sonata. That's the type of work that it's just so theatrical that it's a tragedy not to be, to form it to an empty hall, really.
I've heard that with Janáček, I've heard from orchestral players that sometimes, you know, your first go through with a Janáček piece, you're scratching your head because he doesn't write as like, say, Tchaikovsky would, or like some more conventionally. Is that at all applicable to the string quartets?
Absolutely, and it's a minefield for the string quartets, because there's a relatively recent addition, which I'm not quite sure of the year, which is the Urtext score, so which is true to Janáček's autograph score, but most people have performed from an edition by Milan Škampa, the violist of the Smetana Quartet, who worked very closely with Janáček. But there are different notes, there are different rhythms, and so one is faced with these two different manuscripts and so many questions. And I think we kind of went around it from that, from the theatrical point of view. What's the meaning of each gesture, and then kind of picking and choosing from the two scores. But it's a very unusual thing to do. And I know that I have close friends who studied the work with Milan Škampa, and they heard, for example, us perform it at the Wigmore Hall, and to them it felt like a completely different piece.
Oh, well, you'll have to release a Castalian edition
A
of.
Castalian edition. I don't think anyone would buy it.
Finally, you end up with Brahms, and I just the contrast. It's not exactly going backwards in. It is going backwards in time, but the strength and vision of both composers, Janáček and Brahms, it just strikes me as a wonderful back and forth, a contrast, and the mastery that you're ending with. For us in the audience, it will be kind of a worthwhile journey, but also a lot to ask in a way.
I think so. I think so. I think you're absolutely right. The Brahms is the is the Brahms Second Quartet is a complex work. I mean, I personally, it was one of the quartets that I fell in love with at a very young age. I mean, far before I could understand the piece. And that makes it difficult when you feel like you've lived with a work for many years, and then you come to it in rehearsals and first performances with three other people who've, of course, envisaged it in an entirely different way, and that's very exciting and a wonderful process. But I found it, especially with this piece, that each time we perform it, it's entirely different to the
Oh,
last one.
fascinating.
And this again, this recording, you know, we just had to sit down and play it in this empty hall, and again, it was full of surprises for each of us, I think. You know, it's a mammoth work, and we've actually performed the Brahms' third quartet a lot more, which is actually more rarely done. And that's the third quartet is much more classical in its foundations. You can hear references to Haydn, Mozart, and Beethoven, whereas this the second quartet is you know, definitely deeply rooted in romantic music and a kind of a manner very particular to Brahms. It doesn't feel to me like Brahms at his most grounded, almost like the first quartet you know, it's like earthy Brahms, kind of Beethoven, but this one is almost untouchable, and that's perhaps why it feels so different in every performance. It kind of seems to take a form of its own, which is both thrilling and terrifying. Especially when it's filmed, right?
A special piece from a particular master, yeah. Well, you know, you said you were playing to an empty hall, and that's almost true, but not technically true. I imagine that the camera operators and the sound engineers did appreciate your
Right.
performances.
You're right. And you know, it was they're really wonderful people. We've worked with them. Simon Bout, and he has had, we've worked with him at the Wigmore Hall many times,
Wow.
and he's just the sweetest, kindest, calmest influence you could have. And yet still he and his wife were there, and they just sat a few meters away from us. And because we'd kind of developed that relationship with him, it did mean a lot, actually, just to play to him. And that has an intensity all of its own, rather than a kind of, you know, it could easily, that size of auditorium, be a big auditorium with the lights down, you don't really see the audience. But, you know, we were just connecting with those two people there, who we knew, and that's special in its own way. I have no idea whether that comes across in the film, but it's certainly we all, you know, were in agreement that we'd felt that during the performance.
If you've just tuned in, my guest is Daniel Roberts, who plays second violin with the Castalian String Quartet, a brilliant up-and-coming ensemble that was just about to have a big American tour last spring, but will be on your screens this Friday at 7:30 through Fontana Chamber Arts. Fontanamusic.org is the website where you can get your viewing tickets and watch the film Friday or access it all the way through near the end of March. And I wonder, Daniel, if you would agree with me that some of these sound engineers and behind this, people who always stay behind the scenes and never get much credit, they've kind of had quite a pandemic year of being the unsung heroes of keeping art out there.
Oh, I absolutely right. You know, I sometimes feel that we, as players, you know, we're playing string quartets. There's not much innovation going on in playing string quartets, and so we're, you know, blessed to have people who can bring what we do to a wider audience. And you know, for us, that we could play in September in the Wigmore Hall and know that every single member of our families and many friends, wherever they were, could sit and watch us. That's you know, that's a privilege as well. And you know, not, of course, not every concert that we do is streamed or broadcast. So that's another, you know, if we're looking for silver linings,
Yeah.
Something to be grateful for. Yeah.
I think we have to leave it there for today, Daniel, and I hope that the American tour does happen. It's sooner than
Thank
later.
you.
Kalamazoo will be on the stop maybe, or of course we're 2 hours from Detroit and 2 hours from Chicago, so there's a good
Right.
chance we
Well,
could drive and see you play anyway.
that would be wonderful. And I must say how enormously grateful we are, as a quartet, to have had the opportunity to even perform in this kind of cultural desert at the moment. To be able to perform for you, even through film, is an honor. So thank you so much for making it possible.
Well, so nice to talk to you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.